Chapter 14, My Path to the Light. The Theosophical Society talks about putting people on the path, as if there were only one path to enlightenment. I tried to tell them that I had found another path, but they didn't pay any attention to me. Actually, a book I bought from the Theosophical Society, Beyond Religion, by David N. Elkins, Ph.D., described 8 different paths, one of which was similar to mine. My path was through psychotherapy and dream analysis, enhanced by my own discoveries of the self-steering process and the psychological age of puberty, and with major credit to Carl Jung for leading me into the spiritual. Unlike people who believe in the spiritual just because they believe, I was led to the spiritual through a series of logical steps, like a path, which I can explain to other people in case they might want to follow that path. If psychotherapy is not limited by the therapist's belief in a purely physical universe, it can lead to spiritual awareness. I think that what I experienced was roughly equivalent of Jungian analysis, because it was inspired by the writings of Carl Jung and not limited by any therapist's limitation to the physical. I give Carl Jung the major credit for observing scientifically, of course, in the face of the scientific in-group and its aura of infallibility, that his clients were experiencing a spiritual reality in their dreams. My main inspiration came from the basic writings of C.G. Jung, which led to my winter of dream analysis. This book explains his thinking better than any of his many other books. I have read the chapters in chronological order so that I could more easily follow the development of his thought. He doesn't just leap into the spiritual. He is writing about psychological concepts. He is describing archetypes, which are symbolic representations of universal human ideas. These archetypes in dreams can be numinous, meaning that they may have a spooky quality about them. These archetypes were probably the inspiration for the ancient gods and goddesses. Slowly and logically, he moves from the psychological into the spiritual. He is showing, by observing the content of people's dreams in a scientific way, how our psychology universally includes things that we might call spiritual. And then he tells the story of the monk who prayed that he might look upon the face of God and was granted his wish. The experience was so overpowering that it made him insane for 15 years until he finally assimilated it psychologically. Jung called this original experience. For me, as a child of the mid-20th century, God was an entity thought to have been seen only in ancient times and only by a spiritual elite. It had never before occurred to me that it was possible to see God for oneself. Jung brought this idea into my consciousness with the concept of original experience. This, in my opinion, was Jung's greatest discovery, that it was not necessary to believe in the spiritual on the basis of faith, but possible to believe on the basis of evidence. I have to shout that word evidence to wake up everybody, because after 1,850 years of brainwashing, it is only thinkable that the spiritual must be believed on the basis of faith. Actually, the Catholic Church in the 2nd century AD decreed that everybody had to believe on faith and killed off the Gnostics who believed on the basis of evidence. The evidence, as I experienced it, was the evidence of the mental senses obtained through the mechanism of dreams. And where this might be dismissed as subjective and therefore unreliable, the self-steering process makes it reliable, actually more reliable than the evidence of the physical senses, because the physical senses have no self-steering process. I have accepted everything I am about to say as part of my belief system, and my dreams have never corrected it. And where my dream experience would not be exactly replicable in other individuals, because we are all coming from different places, I would expect our dream experiences to lead us in all the same general direction. From my dreams, I encountered the greatest wisdom I had ever experienced. My dreams helped me to resolve my most serious traumatic experience, which my psychiatrist had missed. They also helped me grow to the psychological age of puberty, the same process that led me to psychological wellness. Also introduced me to the spiritual. Thus, I was led to believe that the spiritual was equally real and equally beneficial to my life. The spiritual was absolutely necessary for me to resolve my traumatic experience. Briefly, an angry adult male had terrified me at age 2.5, and in my childhood misunderstanding, had caused me to draw many wrong conclusions, which had crippled me mentally for 30 years. When I recognized the situation, I thought, I am 30, and he is probably now 70, and I can find him and beat the shit out of him. This had been my childish fantasy of revenge for 30 years. But with the influence of the spiritual, I felt compassion for him. He was just a poor guy with problems of his own, venting his anger on a small child. I forgave him for his mental injury, and that resolved the traumatic experience. Compassion was also necessary for me to reach the psychological age of puberty. I had to feel love for all humanity, a love for the nameless man, woman, and child that was about as strong as my love for my own survival, in order to risk my life by stepping into that little boat, not to be the hero, but only to play some small part in their rescue. In order to teach me compassion, the dreams spent a long time teaching me the meaning of love. The Beatles sang, "All you need is love." But what really is love? Love is something you fall in. Love is desire. Love is self-gratification. Love is many things. Everybody wants it. People give it to somebody who can do something for them. People told me they loved me in order to manipulate me, to help me go from the selfish kind of love to the unselfish kind of love or compassion. My dreams gave me many lessons. They started off with combat lessons, as appropriate for a 10-year-old boy defending himself from or being killed by wild animals such as reptiles, bears, lions, and wolves. Gradually from this emerged another theme, one of cooperation rather than competition. There were lessons of trust and friendship between human beings. Instead of the usual business contract, more of a trust that money would be paid, as in giving somebody a tip. From these simple lessons of trust and friendship, my dreams went on to show how love could overcome my fear of animals that could kill me. I was rubbing up against a lion in the dark, thinking it could kill me, and then thinking of its feelings and saying, "Oh, you poor thing, all alone in the dark." Then the sun came out, and there was no reason to fear. Light in my dreams was the symbol of love, from turning on a small light to turning on the sun. And then there was the supreme light. I dreamed that behind a fog bank, there was a very powerful light, many times more powerful than the sun. And in front of the fog bank, there was a small gold cross. There was no doubt in my mind that the powerful light was God, and the small gold cross was Christ, who makes intercession for us. And the supreme light was the supreme love, as I had seen on the wall of the Christian Science Church, God is love. I have since then stopped calling it God because I don't know that this power is an entity with a will and with all the attributes given to it by the Christian Church. But I do know that this supreme light is the supreme love, which is the supreme power of the universe, at least in our human relationships. The spiritual was first represented in my dreams by a ship that steered an S course for soul or spirit. There was no question about that in my mind. The ship was going out of Provincetown Harbor on a course that would take it into the harbor. There was a cold wind blowing from the south, not north. I learned to recognize the spiritual in dreams because it was the reverse or the mirror image of the physical. The waterfront of Provincetown faced north instead of south in a spiritual dream. I can hear the intellectual saying, S can stand for many things. Dream interpretation is ambiguous. It is like reading tea leaves. Dream interpretation is not intellectual. It is intuitive. The interpretation of the dream must be consistent with all the details of the dream. The dream is all the dreamer needs to know in the dreamer's particular life's situation. That narrows down the possibilities somewhat. And if your interpretation is really wrong, there is the self-steering process to correct you. And none of this, for me, has ever been corrected. The spiritual, of course, was the thing that was seriously missing when I said goodbye to my psychiatrist. I needed to recognize the spiritual and assimilate it into my being in order to feel like a whole human being. The wooden puppet, Pinocchio, needed the spiritual in order to become a real person. Whether the spiritual is real or not, it seems that this is a universal human need because every culture on earth has some kind of spiritual belief. I am sure that the physicalists will ridicule me at this point by saying that I had become a believer, but actually the acceptance of the spiritual in my life was a major component in reaching my goal of happiness. So instead of dismissing Jung as a mystic and me as a believer, scholars need to examine all this in a scholarly way. Is this experience of the spiritual only some dream fantasy with no relation to the real world? Is this experience of the spiritual only a force within the human being, or does it represent a force in the external world? Does the fact that every culture in the world has a belief in the spiritual have its origins in this universal dream experience? How may this dream experience be interpreted other than the conventional religious way? When I had resolved the problems of my childhood, then I wondered, what would I dream about? I was having some really strange dreams that didn't make any sense until finally this dream gave me a clue. Movie camera car taking pictures, coming to a railroad crossing, almost colliding with huge locomotive coming on tracks at an oblique angle. Car doesn't stop, just keeps going at a constant speed. Approaching intersection as light turns yellow, red, then instantly green as camera car goes through. I remember having seen this before. Look in rear view mirror of camera car to see my 48 olds following behind. I am trying to get a better look to see if it's really me. My 48 olds represents the past. Of course, what I am seeing through the windshield is the future. This camera car, which travels at a constant speed, represents the passage of time. The camera represents my ability to see ahead of me in time, as well as behind me in time, not forever, but in some limited range, as a camera would see. This explained some of my confusing dreams. As I reviewed them, I could see that many of them were about future events. I dreamed that a friend came to see me, a friend I had not seen in about a year. He showed up the next day. I told him about the dream. He said that it could have been caused by telepathy, that he was planning the trip and he knew he would see me, and I could have picked up his thoughts. I couldn't argue with that. But in December of the following year, when I was living on Beacon Hill in Boston, I had the following dream experience. It is a very cold morning as I start off to work. My car is parked against the left-hand curb, facing downhill. Thus, the door swung open downhill, and I left it open as I got in to start the car. I turned the key and nothing happened. It wouldn't start. The dream was at about 7 a.m., and at about 8 a.m., I started off to work. It was a very cold morning. My car was parked against the left-hand curb, facing downhill. Thus, the door swung open downhill, and I left it open as I got in to start the car. I put the key in the ignition, and at that point, I remembered the dream. I had never had any trouble starting the car in the 5 years I had owned it. So in total confidence that it would start, I turned the key and nothing happened. It wouldn't start. There was a subtle problem in the starter wiring, which was to cause me a great deal of trouble and expense. I made 5 trips to 3 different garages before an expert mechanic finally was able to fix the problem. First of all, let's get rid of the coincidence argument. The car had started perfectly for 5 years and 9 months, or about 2,000 days, and the dream had prophesied exactly the time that it first failed to start. That's 1 chance in 2,000 of it being a coincidence. And then, to get rid of the telepathy argument, here was a machine that had a malfunction that nobody knew about until the dream revealed it to me. This shift to dreaming of the future is consistent with the teachings of Richard Kininger, that when one has reached psychological adulthood, the next step in psychological development is to develop one's clairvoyant powers. It is also consistent with the idea of spiritual bypassing, in that when one has resolved one's childhood traumas, not only is one free to develop spiritually, but also one's dreams are supporting the person in that forward development, instead of always looking backward at unresolved problems. I had seen evidence of a spiritual reality, but I knew very little about it. I had studied physics to learn about the physical reality, and psychology to learn about the mental reality. Now I needed some kind of education to help me understand the spiritual reality. Just as I was pondering this, an old girlfriend came to town and handed me a copy of There is a River, the story of Edgar Cayce by Thomas Chagrou. Briefly, for those who aren't familiar with him, Edgar Cayce, American psychic, 1877 to 1945, was able to go into a trance state, and in that trance state was able to answer questions about things that he did not consciously know and other people couldn't see, such as people's medical problems or the Akashic Record, which he described as God's Book of Remembrances. These trance sessions were called readings, and present at these readings was always a conductor who asked the questions and a stenographer who recorded everything that was said. The stenographer, of course, was very important because now we have a permanent record of all these readings. These readings are now on file at the library of the Association for Research and Enlightenment, ARE, in Virginia Beach, and are available for qualified researchers to study. Most of these readings were medical diagnoses and suggestions for treatment. Casey always worked with a licensed medical doctor who made the actual prescriptions. Somebody followed up, or tried to, on all the treatments to see whether they were effective. That information was documented too, and in more than 90% of the cases, his treatments were proven to be effective. The other 10% weren't all proven to be ineffective because some people didn't follow the treatments and some people didn't report back. This rate of success is even more remarkable because a great many of these were cases where conventional medicine had failed. After Casey had been doing these medical readings for a while, a man named Arthur Lammers came and asked for a horoscope reading. Without having been prompted, Casey volunteered the information that this was the third incarnation on Earth for Lammers. This was the first of about 2,500 life readings that Casey gave. Describing people's previous incarnations and how they influenced their present lives. For me, this was proof of reincarnation. Here was an unknown mental process that produced verified accurate results in more than 90% of 9,000 medical readings, so this process had a verified error rate of less than 10%. Then what was the probability that the process was wrong in all 2,500 life readings, which could not be verified? That asserted that reincarnation was a fact. Note that this is not the probability of any one particular life reading being accurate, but the probability that every life reading was accurate in asserting that there was a such thing as reincarnation, and never denied. Given an error rate of 10%, the probability of Casey having been wrong about reincarnation in every one of 2,500 life readings is 0.10 to the 2,500th power, a number so small that it is meaningless. The probability of reincarnation being a fact based on this evidence is as close to certainty as you can get. Was there any bias operating here that would have biased Casey towards a belief in reincarnation? First of all, no suggestion of reincarnation had been given to him in the initial life reading. He had been asked for a horoscope, and he spontaneously came out with the information on reincarnation. What makes it even more convincing is that his bias was against reincarnation. He was a devout Christian who read the Bible once for every year of his life, and the Bible didn't say anything about reincarnation. He resolved this conflict by observing that the Bible didn't say anything against reincarnation either. He found passages in the Bible that hinted at reincarnation. In John chapter 8, verse 58, "Before Abraham was, I am." And in John chapter 9, verse 2, "Who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And Casey was in constant prayer. "If this isn't right, I don't want to do it." To support Edgar Casey's assertion that reincarnation did exist, 20 cases suggestive of reincarnation by Ian Stevenson has now been followed by evidence of reincarnation in more than 2,000 such studies. Some of these have been in the United States, where people don't even believe in reincarnation. There is now a 6-step procedure that reincarnation researchers follow to protect against bias and cheating. Along with reincarnation comes the law of karma. This is the other half of the golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you, because whatever you do unto others will be done unto you. maybe not in this incarnation, but in some incarnation. Those who live by the sword shall die by the sword. Again, maybe not in this lifetime, but in some lifetime. You don't have to believe in reincarnation to see the law of karma in action. The force that makes people keep recreating those situations in life where they have psychological problems is at least related to the law of karma. You have to keep coming back until you get it right, as one of the Beatles once said. Reincarnation and karma are only a couple of the subjects dealt with in the Edgar Cayce readings. Other subjects include Atlantis, levitation, a cosmology, and the idea that the purpose of our life on Earth is education towards our spiritual advancement. These ideas represent an enormous contribution to our culture. But Edgar Cayce, it is insinuated, it is whispered, in academic circles, was somehow fraudulent. His critics need to produce evidence supporting this claim. I have seen no evidence of fraud in the dozens of books that I have read about Edgar Cayce, or the many dealings that I have had with the ARE over the years. Edgar Cayce had to go to court twice, once on charges of practicing medicine without a license, and the other time for fortune-telling. He was acquitted both times. Two scholarly investigators were reported in There is a River. The first was Hugo Munsterberg of Harvard in 1912, who concluded that the phenomenon warranted further study. The second was William Moseley Brown of Washington and Lee in 1928, who said, "I can't expose it. I'll have to believe in it." Everything I know about Edgar Cayce appears to be totally genuine. If academic people have evidence to the contrary, they need to come forward with it. Their beliefs seem to be more in line with the insinuations I have read in Skeptic.com, which their freshman students in critical thinking should be able easily to invalidate. My dreams warned me of the dangers of taking LSD, but I had to experiment with marijuana in the summer of 1967 just to catch the flavor of the drug experience. Some of it was good, but some of it was bad. My natural defenses were opened up so that dead people were coming into my dreams, and this was frightening to me. In 1968, I brought this problem to a highly recommended psychiatrist in the Boston area. His opinion was, "You have a deep-seated problem." I told him I had already successfully completed psychotherapy with another psychiatrist and that I had enough experience with dream analysis so that I could tell the difference between what was coming up from my subconscious and what was coming in from an outside entity. But his belief system was fixed. He didn't believe in the existence of spirit entities, so anything to do with the dead had to be a deep-seated problem. I even wrote to my previous psychiatrist, asking him to verify that I had already successfully completed psychotherapy, but I realized that he didn't believe in spirit entities either. I never heard from him. This brings up the legal issue that two psychiatrists sharing a fixed belief system can put away for life, without due process of law, a person who doesn't agree with their beliefs. There is the assumption that the psychiatrists are right because they have credentials, the caste system, and the dissenting person is wrong. There is a certain arrogance in this, in assuming that the people with the credentials know all there is to know. I asked him, "Why am I paying this psychiatrist top dollar to give him an education?" So I ended the treatment and sent him a copy of Edgar Cayce on Dreams, which I'm sure he immediately threw into the trash. I was beyond the scope of the knowledge of the psychological profession, beyond the reach of the culture to help me. I was on my own to deal with my psychological problems. Edgar Cayce had taught me that we, the living, were more powerful than spirit entities, because we had everything they had, plus a physical body. That helped me, initially, to get rid of the spooks in my dreams. I yelled once in a dream, "Get the hell out of here!" And they all vanished. A simple assertion of will was enough. Later on, I learned the protective prayer from Richard Kininger, "Dear Christ, please protect me." This protection from higher beings was almost miraculous in bringing me up out of a spooky dream instantly. Yes, there is such a thing as spirit interference, as people believed before the scientific establishment decreed that there was no such thing. But the individual is not morally responsible for these demonic influences any more than children are responsible for being attacked by bullies in the schoolyard. And while the psychiatric profession is lagging in its knowledge, we can ask for the protection of higher beings, also believed not to exist. When I reached the psychological age of puberty and became an altruistic person, it seemed that there was no place for me in the world. In a culture dominated by competitive self-interest, I had read somewhere that it was possible for people to will themselves to die, and I was afraid I might will myself to die. The dead people in my dreams enhanced that fear, as if they were expecting my arrival. I lived in that state for about 2 years, until the spring of 1969, when I was organizing the material for re-educating myself. One day I was exhausted and depressed, seeing the huge amount of material that I had and the enormous task that lay ahead of me. I flopped down on my bed, not caring whether I lived or died. Immediately, I lost physical consciousness. Immediately, I shot up out of my basement apartment into a tunnel just wide enough for my shoulders. Up, up, up. An enormous distance at an enormous rate of speed into the presence of the light. I knew from reading Carl Jung not to look upon the face of God, so I shielded my eyes from the light with my right arm. Off to the left, or at the right hand of God, stood the figure of Christ. He told me simply, "Get back to work." And back down I went. I have never again been afraid to die, or afraid that I might will myself to die. I have felt since then that the higher powers were supporting my work, that I have been on God's payroll. Not long after that, I was walking the dunes on a beautiful sunny day, thinking beautiful thoughts, and when I came into town, I saw a beautiful woman with a friend of mine, so of course I had to meet her. "You are very disturbed," she said. I tried to explain to her that it was a beautiful day and that I was thinking beautiful thoughts and I was definitely not disturbed. But she kept insisting that I was disturbed, and the more I tried to argue with her, the more disturbed I became. When I finally managed to break away from her, the sky had clouded over and it wasn't a beautiful day anymore. That experience was my introduction to the forces of evil, FOE. As there were positive spiritual forces in the universe, so also there were negative spiritual forces. As I had begun to think of myself as being on God's payroll, now here I had encountered somebody working for the opposing forces. I am sure that this one piece of evidence that there is such a thing as the forces of evil, FOE, will be met with ridicule and scorn by the physicalists. But please note that ridicule and scorn are the only arguments they have ever had to dismiss the idea of such forces existing. There is no scientific argument, and ridicule and scorn actually prevent science from operating because they create a bias against even investigating the subject. All of this, I realize, is personal and unprovable to another person. But most of life is personal and not provable to another person. Where science can't always be applied in its authoritarian form, scientific methods can be applied in our daily lives to prove things to ourselves. This, I believe, is the meaning intended by Richard Kininger when he describes the Brotherhoods as scientists, philosophers. We can all use the methods of science, of observation and proof, in our daily lives to determine what is more accurate and less accurate, approaching an ultimate knowledge of what is true and not true, without the need for so-called authorities to tell us what to believe. And so I introduce the Brotherhood's philosophy, as best as I am able to represent it, as presented by Richard Kininger, also writing under the pen name of Eklal Kuishana. The Brotherhoods are secret societies of people who are highly developed mentally and spiritually. They keep their identity secret to avoid persecution. They recognize each other through controlled clairvoyance. I had heard about the Masons, who incorporated their own spiritual symbols into the building of the cathedrals of Europe, and the Sufis, whose poetry incorporated a kind of code of spiritual symbols. So I was ready to accept the idea that such people existed. These are living people on earth, not spirit entities. The information coming through Richard was not channeled. The first thing anybody needs to know about the Brotherhood's philosophy is that they were wrong about the doomsday that was supposed to occur on the 5th of May of the year 2000. That should get rid of the people who need to believe on the basis of somebody else's so-called authority. The Brotherhood's philosophy is something to believe on the authority of your own mind. You have the authority and the responsibility to decide for yourself whether or not they are right. And to start with, as I have already mentioned, it should all be taken as a working hypothesis. Yes, they offer a whole cosmology, one that makes more sense than the Christian teachings. But this is not to be believed absolutely as gospel, but only as a hypothesis for each of us to test in our life experiences and prove or disprove for ourselves. Consistent with this approach, the Brotherhoods teach that what you read in a book is not knowledge, but only information. It doesn't become knowledge until you have tested it and proved it to yourself in your life's experience. This I also agree with on my own authority, as the highest authority for deciding what to believe for myself. One of the things I like about the Brotherhood's philosophy is the 12 great virtues. Sincerity, which is honesty, courage, devotion, charity, patience, humility, precision, efficiency, kindness, tolerance, forbearance, and discernment. They are things I have been working on all my life in my psychological development, without actually naming them. In fact, you can't work with them as just an external chart on the wall that you check off every day. You have to look inside yourself and ask, how was I honest, courageous, kind, tolerant, and so forth today? They go hand in hand with psychotherapy. And I also appreciate the fact that some things that are considered virtues in other systems, such as obedience, chastity, vegetarianism, aren't there. These are not virtues, to my way of thinking. Again, on my supreme authority to decide for myself. Because the word virtue comes from the Latin vir, for man, I would change the name to something else, such as the 12 great human qualities, to get away from the masculine terminology. The most powerful and the most frightening to me of the Brotherhood's teaching is the idea that there are spirit entities called black mentalists, whose karma is so bad that they cannot possibly incarnate on this earth because they would self-destruct immediately. So they can never develop spiritually and are doomed forever to weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth in utter darkness. Therefore, they attempt to bring everybody else down with them by polluting our minds with telepathic suggestions. No living person on earth is a black mentalist, but living persons can be influenced by black mentalists, as can be detected by black in their auras. We can see with our normal senses the influence of the black mentalists in the black limousines and suits of the very rich and powerful and the black robes of the priesthood. The first two people I told this to instantly called me paranoid. That sounds like an instant psychological defense against a frightening idea, and it is possible that black mentalists helped out in that defense, because they put ideas in people's heads, and possibly all psychological defenses are influenced by black mentalists who don't want anybody to have a clear head. We can see the evil that exists in the physical realm. So I think that New Age explorers into the spiritual are naive when they make no mention of possible evil in the spiritual realm. Again, this is not gospel. This is a working hypothesis. Might there be evil entities influencing our religions, our politics, and even our most highly respected sources of knowledge? Our academic institutions? By malevolent telepathic suggestions? I leave that as a question, but it is not a question to be ignored. Meanwhile, according to the Brotherhoods, the Holy Spirit protects us against black mentalists. The Holy Spirit is composed of the most highly developed human beings, along with angels and archangels and higher celestial beings. All of these entities are more powerful than black mentalists. We all have these higher beings to protect us, and the protective prayer, which is basically, "Dear Christ, please protect me." Richard Kinniger taught that we should not pray indiscriminately to the spirit world for help or guidance, because there are plenty of spirit entities ready to guide us to our doom, but that we should pray specifically to Christ and only for protection. He was accused of religious prejudice when he said, "Pray specifically to Christ." So he said, yes, of course, you can pray to Buddha or Muhammad or Moses or other high-level adepts. They are all members of the Holy Spirit and all more powerful than black mentalists. I don't believe in angels, but I pray to them. It works. As with Edgar Cayce, there are many aspects of the Brotherhood's philosophy, as presented by Richard Kinniger, that I haven't mentioned here. And as with Edgar Cayce, these are ideas that need to be incorporated into our culture. At the Dream Conference in 1991, I was having lunch with a man in a Hawaiian shirt. He asked me, "Have you ever considered that dreams might come from God?" I hadn't thought about that. Dreams came from the subconscious. But subconscious is another one of those words like random or placebo effect that we use when we don't know. We don't know where dreams come from. Looking for dreams in brain activity might be as inappropriate as trying to understand TV programming by studying the workings of a TV set. Dreams may come from God, for all we know. The man in the Hawaiian shirt later identified himself as a Catholic priest. If he had been in uniform, I probably would have dismissed his question as simply a reflection of his belief system. But because he wasn't, he gave me the opportunity to think about it. These dreams, which were the greatest wisdom I have ever encountered, may not have come just from my own subconscious, but may have come from higher beings. This is my path to the light. It is not complete. I don't know what is at the top, but I know that if I keep going uphill, I will get there. My approach is through psychotherapy, through self-knowledge, and through self-correction with the help from my dreams. Dream analysis, taking advantage of the self-steering process, is a natural path to spiritual growth and enlightenment. Dreams are tailored precisely to the educational needs of the individual, as opposed to man-made disciplines, which may demand some conformity to a philosophy and take the individual away from his or her real self. I have learned that people on the path are required to submit to and be obedient to the absolute authority of the teacher. On my path, I don't need any authority telling me the truth and demanding my absolute obedience. The psychotherapist is only a guide to help me find the places where I know subconsciously that I am wrong, on my own authority. Dreams are the same. They may appear to be an authority because of their ability to correct me, but it is all subject to my interpretation. I am the authority who has to agree with what the dreams are trying to say. My ability to communicate this path to the culture has been blocked at every step of the way by academic prejudices against Freud, not during my therapy, but more recently. Psychotherapy as philosophical education, Jung, always branded as a mystic, dream analysis, dreams are a random firing of neurons, the mental senses, not objective, spiritual reality, non-existent, Edgar Cayce, insinuations and laughter, and Eklal Kuishana, whose book was sold under the counter at a Boston bookstore. I challenge the academic establishment to defend each one of these prejudices with an argument that would receive a passing grade in their freshman courses in critical thinking.